Our next case today is United States v. Wilson. Our counsel, ready? Okay. Thank you. We will hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Matthew Hallandoni, and along with Major Christopher Coleman, we represent the appellant, Specialist Wilson. This court should set aside and dismiss Specialist Wilson's conviction for housebreaking because the military judge erroneously found Article 130 could be applied to an outdoor fenced motor pool. The plain meaning of the statute, President's explanation, this court's precedent, and the legislative history all dictate that the motor pool in this case is not a building or structure subject to housebreaking. This court should find the military judge erred in denying the defense's RCM 917 motion and also find Specialist Wilson's conviction for housebreaking legally insufficient. Additionally, this court should make a bright-line rule that Article 130 only applies to buildings or structures that are enclosed, covered, and primarily used for habitation or storage.
What should we do with United States versus Wickersham? Are you going to get to that in your argument?
I am, Your Honor.
Go ahead. I don't want to disrupt you.
I can answer it now, Your Honor? Okay. Answer it now, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Okay. Your Honor, Wickersham, the holding of Wickersham was that Article 134 unlawful entry applied to an outdoor fence storage yard.
Right, but that court spent a lot of time talking about housebreaking, didn't it?
Well, Your Honor, they talk about the legislative history. And again, the holding was unlawful entry could be applied to a storage yard. We believe that that statement was in dicta. Now, that dicta could be persuasive, but what it should be looked at is that court's view on the legislative history of the housebreaking statute. It could be persuasive, but it is not binding on this court. It wasn't binding on the military judge in this case.
Well, there's a lot of it. That's the only reason why I ask. If that's dicta, that's a lot of dicta, isn't it?
Well, there is dicta, Your Honor. I'd also point out that it was a 2-1 decision on the panel, and there was a lot of discussion from Chief Judge Everett also basically disagreeing with the majority's opinion in that case.
Well, I love Judge Everett, but I mean, what does that mean?
Sorry, Your Honor?
I love Judge Everett just because he dissented. That doesn't mean anything.
It is a dissent, Your Honor. It is a dissent, but there's a number of things that we can look to besides Wickersham in this case. The most important being the plain meaning of the statute. And when we look at the plain meaning, Black's Law Dictionary defines building as a structure with walls and a roof, especially a permanent structure. A structure is any construction, production, or piece of work artificially built up or composed of parts purposefully joined together. And then in explanatory brackets, it says a building is a structure. So that's what the plain meaning of it is.
Now, well, it's a Venn diagram, building, structure.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, there's a bigger universe of structures than there is of buildings. So where's this fall?
Well, Your Honor, when we further narrow it down, when we look at what the MCM, what the president intended in interpreting the statute, it makes it unambiguous. The definition in the MCM says a structure in a housebreaking context means only those structures which are in the nature of a building or a dwelling. And then if you look at the plain meaning, that means it's enclosed by walls and a roof.
Well, why don't we go to the president's explanation of that? I mean, you're going to legal dictionaries, and the president has defined it, hasn't he, in the rule?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why don't we go there? Why doesn't it stop and start there?
We can stop and start there as well, Your Honor. I think the plain meaning is what the president's basing his explanation off of. And that's where we can stop. We can stop and start.
Well, for us, isn't the plain meaning what the president says it is?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And then, but you also look at that in addition to this court's precedent, which also shows that this court has never applied Article 130 housebreaking to something that does not have these characteristics, enclosed by walls and a roof, and primarily used for habitation and storage.
Does it matter that when most of these cases were decided, and they all go off on 134, the 134 offense was thought to be an LIO of housebreaking, but obviously isn't anymore?
Yes, Your Honor.
Since Fosler and the line of cases having to do with, you know, does it matter that it's not an LIO anymore?
It does not matter. It does not matter, Your Honor.
Why not?
And you can look at unlawful entry, terminal element aside,
yeah,
it can still be a lesser included of the greater offense because it's a different type of structure. So any type of structure that would fall under...
Leave the terminal element out of it, and what differentiates the two?
It's the built that it has to be a building, and or a building light structure is what
I thought it was. Housebreaking requires intent.
Well, that's a separate element of housebreaking, but when you look at the president's explanation, he's defining structure in two different ways. In Article 130, he says a building or a building like structure, or the structure is in the form of a building. In Article 134, he says real or personal property used for habitation or storage. So that can be a broader expanse than that much narrower definition in Article 130.
So if it's real property used for storage, is a motor pool real property used for storage?
Your Honor, if the question is could it be subject to unlawful entry, it could be. But it's not a building or structure subject to Article 130. And on Article 134, unlawful entry, was not charged in this case. They charged under housebreaking, so there can be no conviction.
So your point is the government would not be left without a crime. They're simply not left with housebreaking.
They're not left with what they charged. They made their charging decision. And that's why that bright line rule isn't just for my client or for courts to make a decision. It's for prosecutors. It's to guide prosecutors in knowing the limits of what they're charging when they put these things on the charge sheet.
You keep talking about having us adopt a bright-line rule, and I guess my question goes back to, hasn't the president adopted a bright-line rule?
He has, Your Honor.
In Article 130, Article 134 says what Article 134 says, but this is a 130 case.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And the only reason I suggest making the bright-line rule is because apparently that wasn't clear enough for the prosecutors in this case to charge. And so,
how is the language that the president used changed between when Wickersham was decided and today?
It hasn't, Your Honor. In 130, I believe, in the analysis of the punitive articles, that Article 130 was based on Gillen and the 69 version of the manual. So the president has had 30-plus years to look at Wickersham and perhaps change the definition, and he hasn't. I believe that it shows that it was dicta. It was not the holding of that case. Now, the Article 134 language says that it is based on Wickersham. So that was included in the future versions of the MCM following Wickersham.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can – I want to let you off the hook yet on Wickersham here and this issue of dicta. And I don't profess to be the know-it-all on what is or is not dicta, but – I mean, Wickersham was decided in 1983, and the judges in that court went all the way back to, went all the way back to 1949, 1951 manual, talking about this notion of a yard for storage being a structure. And your view is that we just kind of disregard all that and
not necessarily.
Chalk it up to dicta and move on?
No, not necessarily.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a bad idea. I'm not saying it is, but I just want to know what your view is.
Well, Your Honor, one thing I would point out is that in the 1951 D.C. Code, they specifically enumerate the types of structures that are subject to housebreaking. Included in that is a storage yard used for storage of goods in trade. That's a specific type of yard, and they talk about a lumber yard and a coal yard. And also to keep in mind, that's a municipality. That's D.C. It's different than the military and what we have. Now, when the president looked at that and promulgated his explanation under the MCM, he specifically didn't include those types of yards in the housebreaking statute. And so that's the president's explanation based on the legislative intent of the D.C. code narrowed further for the military context. Your Honor, I think looking at the plain language, it means it has to have walls and a roof. That's what it needs to be, and obviously a dwelling is something where someone lives or habitates. And
well, if it has walls and a roof, it's not the nature of a building, it's a building.
It can be, Your Honor, but like this court said in I believe it was Kronk, 1954 case, they said a tent being used for habitation or storage, a tent being used as a dwelling for military personnel is subject to unlawful entry. So,
well, if it's a dwelling, then it's burglary.
Unless it's at night. And
well, they're getting, you know, whether it's a night statute or not.
Right. Your Honor. Yeah. 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 So if it's a dwelling, but housebreaking is seen as a subset of burglary, and so it making it criminal to not necessarily enter a dwelling, but some other kind of enclosed, covered.
So what if you had a shed that's open at the, say the back of it is closed because the back of it's the fence, the enclosure. It's got a roof because you park cars in it and you don't want the cars rained on.
Yes or no, Your Honor? I think that's where you also have
it's within the enclosure.
Within the, so it is enclosed. It is enclosed and covered. And then you have to look at what it's being used for. Is it being
used? Well, so you're storing stuff in it. You're not, nobody's living there, but you're storing stuff in it, and you want to keep the stuff dry.
Yes, I think that looking at all the factors, that if it's enclosed and
well, it's not enclosed, except it's got posts to keep the roof up, and the back's enclosed because the back's part of the enclosure.
Your Honor, I think another aspect, and the reason that the enclosure is important is because it shows that it's not easy to access. So there's an additional level of security there when it's enclosed that it shows a boldness of the offender having to break through, or not necessarily a break, but enter through an enclosure.
So then that's what he did here.
Well, Your Honor, he jumped over an uncovered.
Yeah, that's an enclosure.
So then building on Judge Stuckey's analogy, what if you had the structure with the post and the roof, but the sides were a fence? So it's not wide open as Judge Stuckey's analogy was, but it goes to your point about you have to use more purposeful and nefarious means to get in if it's a fence along the sides of those posts.
Just trying to envision that.
Think of it as a large carport.
Yes, Your Honor.
With posts and a roof. That one goes along with what Judge Stuckey was saying.
Okay.
But now they have also put alongside of the post holding up the roof a fence.
So it is enclosed and covered at that point. Or
I'm asking you.
Well, are we the fence are right along the posts?
It's not fence, like the fence is affixed to attached
fixed to the post.
The
post. I mean, I think that that.
Well, is it a solid fence or is it
right.
a wire fence?
And here's the, and going back to what Chief Judge Everett said, that's the problem we run into is if we say that a fence is good enough, then we start talking about, well, what's the fence made of? How high is it? Are there holes in the fence?
Let me jump on the bandwagon here as far as extended analogies go. What about you're out in middle of Afghanistan there and you get to a village and it's got the ceiling bombed out, but the walls are all still there. And, of course, you and your unit decide you're going to store your stuff in there, some materials. And one of the members decides he's going to go over the wall and take some of these items. Is that housebreaking? I mean, you seem to have indicated that you require a roof or
Your
some
Honor,
cover on the top.
I think at some point it
what
had
What about
a
stone
roof?
Enclosure with just a window to get into with no roof?
To
continue on the extended analogies.
And I think we can keep going down the road of what is. And that's the problem. That's
why you think we should have just say, write this bright line and be done with it, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Bright line rule simply restating what Article 130, the President's explanation says.
If people break into a motor pool, they can be guilty of
unlawful entry
and stealing government property, et cetera, et cetera, but not housebreaking.
Not housebreaking. Yes. Pending any further questions from the court, this court should set aside and dismiss Specialist Wilson's conviction for housebreaking and adopt this bright-line rule defining the limits of Article 130 as those with as a structure enclosed by walls, covered by a roof, and primarily used for habitation or storage.
Let me start again with one more swipe at the dying horse that I started with Wickersham. And do you want us to vindicate Judge Everett in Wickersham, or You seem to be mentioning him a couple of times. Not that I'm all, I'm not vindicating Judge Everett, but is that what you're suggesting?
I think
we got to do something with Wickersham. What are we supposed to do with it?
To Judge Everett is, I think it makes a, it's the policy argument of, if we don't have this bright line rule, how far does it go? And it's going to lead to absurd results. If we follow the government's position, it could lead to the absurd result where if you jump over a police plastic tape line where they're keeping evidence or something like that, you're now subject to housebreaking instead of trespassing, which is what that crime should be charged with.
Okay.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will now hear from the government.
Judge Erdman, judges of the court, may it please the court, my name is Captain John Gardella, and along with Major Cormick Smith, we represent the government in this matter. This court should affirm the findings and sentence as approved by the CCA because this court already determined in Wickersham, first, that Congress intended the addition of the word structure to enlarge the scope of properties included in Article 1, in an Article 130 offense, and second,
so you take issue with it being dicta. Is that, I hate to keep beating this horse, but I'm stuck here what to do with this case. Now, maybe the other judges are not, but I'm stuck in this issue. He says this is all dicta.
Yes, Judge Sparks. The government absolutely takes issue with this solely being dicta in that in deciding U.S. v. Wickersham, the court came to the conclusion that the motor or that the outdoor storage area in that case was a part of an unlawful entry offense because it was also part of a housebreaking offense under Article 130. So if it could have been part of an Article 130 offense, then it must also be a part of an unlawful entry offense.
But counsel, in Wickersham, the court said, quote, the critical issue in this case may now be properly addressed. The question is whether storage area of the United States Air Force located on base may lawfully be the subject of such an unlawful entry charge. Isn't that almost like a law school exam for saying what we're focusing on is the unlawful entry charge so that anything that gets into the area of housebreaking is dicta?
To a certain extent, Your Honor, Judge Olson. And I believe right before that, the court also says we believe that Congress, in enacting Article 130 and in including the term structure, intended to return to this broad position as to the scope of the housebreaking offense. So as a part of the court's analysis in Wickersham, I mean, yes, the holding in Wickersham is not that an outdoor storage area is a part of an Article 130 offense. However, the analysis in Wickersham got to the property in that case to be an Article 134 offense because it was also included under the properties in Article 130.
Here's a question. At least in Wickersham, it was defined specifically as being a storage area, right, which is language that I believe right from the DC, original DC code, right? Here you alleged a motor pool.
Correct, Judge Ryan. And the difference between the two properties is,
I'm just saying, if we're going to quibble about how many names dance on the head of a pin, right, or how many walls you need or roofs you need, shouldn't you be precise?
Well, Your Honor, the facts of what this motor pool was is no different than the storage area in Wickersham. The facts of what this storage area was in that it included the fence. In the charge, they included the fence by including the specific language of what motor pool the appellant was accused of breaking into. So the facts of this motor pool, though, are that it included POL and other vehicles within it. It included Connexes and various other types of storage units inside of it. And the motor pool enclosed all of these various types of properties. So this is the same storage area or the same function of the motor pool functions the same as the storage area did in Wickersham.
Counsel, given the language of the statute and of the president's explanation and of his definitions, would you agree that we wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Wickersham? If it wasn't for that analysis and definition, just looking at this plain language, would you be making the same argument you're making today?
If I understand your question, Chief Judge Irvin, is it the president's definition? Is it clear as to whether or not is included?
If the president's definition were the end-all, be-all, and Wickersham didn't exist.
Well, we still have two things to look at, then. If we didn't have Wickersham, we still know that the congressional intent by adding the term structure was to broaden the scope.
Okay, but if their intent was to broaden it, which it was, why didn't they say turn it from building to building or structure to building or structure or storage area?
Which the D.C. code has.
Or it's even more narrow than storage area. It's a yard where any lumber, coal, or other goods or chattels are deposited and kept for the purpose of trade. I mean, that was the D.C. code. What does that have to do with the motor pool? I mean, I'm just saying, to the extent that Wickersham starts sort of with the D.C. code and then winds its way forward in the context of unlawful entry while relating it to housebreaking, shouldn't we be stuck with that specific language?
With the specific language in the D.C. code, Judge Ryan? Well,
I could be wrong, but I think that Judge Irvin's point is that if you just look at the language under Article 130, you don't naturally think that a building or a structure, even a structure in the nature of a building and dwelling, has anything to do with motor pool. I'm just saying, if you're in a pristine legal world where those are the only words that we were looking at and there was no Wickersham.
There is still an argument that this would be, that this is included in the nature of a building. It is a type of structure and it does have a fence around it. So it is similar to a building, which is what in the nature of a building.
But the president says that structures are those structures which are in the nature of a building or dwelling. So how can a fenced motor pool be in the nature of a building or a dwelling?
Wouldn't that be more like a tent or like your berthing area?
Well, to say that a tent is in the nature of a building or dwelling, but this motor pool is not in the nature of a building or dwelling, would that mean that adding a tarp over this motor pool would cause it to be in the nature of a building?
Like most motor pools, there's a building in the motor pool, and then there's a motor pool.
Yes, Judge Ryan. And that would be included, but you have the building, and then you have what's in the nature of a building or dwelling, which in this case is
a
motor
pool. I have a fence around my house, right? And it's a wrought iron fence, and it was not inexpensive, and it's part of my house. Is my front yard in the nature of a building because it's fenced?
Potentially, Your Honor. This court has also looked to what the intended use of the property is at the time that it was broken into. So, in this case, the fact that the motor pool is used for storage.
I'm storing weed and terriers.
Then potentially, yes, it could be in the nature of a building. But specifically with regard to this motor pool in this case, this court in Wickersham already determined that the outdoor storage area in the U.S. The outdoor storage area of the U.S. Air Force is a structure because it can reasonably be considered a yard where property of the United States government is deposited and kept. And
but
this
that falls directly with the language used for unlawful entry, not the language used for housebreaking, right? It doesn't use the words building or dwelling or structure. What you just said. I mean, actually.
Yes. Well, that language is analogizing the property that was in Wickersham to an Article 130 offense, and we know from the legislative history of an Article 130 offense that this court already determined that Congress was looking back to the D.C. Code, and in analogizing that property to what the D.C. Code stated, it stated that it was look, it determined that this type of outdoor storage area was considered the property, a yard where property is deposited and kept.
But when they look back to the D.C. Code as a source for this new provision, can they, when that's being interpreted, is it proper to interpret language from the D.C. Code that wasn't brought over? And that appears to be what they're doing. It appears that they kind of bootstrapped the language that wasn't adopted from the D.C. Code into their analysis.
Well,
I mean, you can certainly look back to see where it came from, but if it wasn't taken and transferred, then I'm not too sure whether or not you can rely on it.
Well, two answers to that question, Judge Erdman. And the first answer is the fact that it includes only the word structure, and we know specifically from the legislative intent that that word was intended to broaden the scope. You could say that the scope of our statute in Article 130 is actually broader than the D.C. Code, which has specific examples and seems to only limit it to those examples. The President's definition should be contrasted, says that these are examples of what properties can be housebroken into, whereas the D.C. Code kind of just states the actual properties that are intended under housebreaking.
Can you just give me a simple definition of just the word building?
A building would have walls and roof, Your Honor.
Okay, so a structure in the nature of a building
would not be as complete as a building with walls and a roof, which is...
We realize you didn't draft any of this.
Counsel, does it matter? We're all throwing the D.C. Code around. And, of course, they threw the D.C. Code around when they first put housebreaking in the Articles of War. Does it matter that the present-day D.C. Code doesn't have an offense denoted housebreaking?
No, it does
because
not. Because
the language we're all talking about has been moved to burglary. It's
correct.
Now second-degree burglary. Does that matter?
No, not at all, Your Honor. When the language in the current Article 130 offense was adopted or was written into the UCMJ, it was in 1951. And 1951 was the same time that the D.C. Code still read as it did back in 1921, what is originally adopted into the Articles of War, as you noted. And so that language was the same in 1951. The D.C. Code language was the same, including all of the examples that we've talked about today, especially a yard where any lumber, coal, or other goods are chattels. So the purpose of looking to the D.C. Code at that time was because that was the time when this statute was originally enacted.
Okay, so what do we look to? Because the manual seems to take a position against you. So what do we look to? We look to Wickersham?
You look to the analysis already done by this court in U.S. v. Wickersham.
Yeah, you look to Wickersham, even though Wickersham isn't a housebreaking case.
Correct, Judge Tsuji, but the fact that they came to the conclusion that the outdoor storage area was included as a yard where property of the U.S. government is deposited and kept, this is the same type of outdoor storage area, and we still have the same D.C. code that we're analogizing this to.
No, we don't.
Well, we don't but we're still analogizing it back to the D.C. code that was in place in 1951 when we're looking at the legislative intent of this statute. My colleague brings up the slippery slope argument. The slippery slope argument in the dissent in Wickersham has no bearing on this case. The dissent's slippery slope argument in Wickersham has to do with specifically with an Article 134 offense. In an Article 134 offense, the chief judge said that he was afraid that someone with, you know, maybe a reckless mens rea, we would say these days, accidentally or recklessly steps onto someone else's property and then can be held accountable for a punitive. That is not the case here because we have a specific intent element for housebreaking. So the fact that that the government has to prove specific intent, it eliminates the slippery slope argument. There has to be some sort of property on the on the something on the property for the appellant or the accused to then commit a crime therein, to commit most likely a larceny or some other.
Captain, is some of the concern that unlawful entry is perceived as simply not as serious an offense as housebreaking? The punishments are dramatically different. Is that some of the concern, that if we got rid of, if we took the dicta or the language in Wickersham and said, hey, look, that's either dicta or to the extent that it changed, it talks about this being a structure, it's overruled, then you're left with unlawful entry in this kind of situation, are you not? You know what I'm saying? If you get rid of the analysis in Wickersham, then you're left with unlawful entry for this kind of situation, right? Is there a concern that that's simply not a serious enough offense to address the kind of conduct here in this kind of situation? 6 months would be in a discharge is not enough?
Your Honor, it's not necessarily.
It may not be a question you can ask, but you can answer, because it might be a policy call, but I'm just wondering if that's some of what might be going on.
It's not necessarily that the government takes issue with the amount of punishment available under unlawful entry. The criminality in this case is the same that the government is attempting to punish, regardless of whether or not there was a tarp or something spread across the motor pool in order to enclose it, as the defense has argued. The criminality is still jumping over the fence with the intent to commit a larceny. And so this, and then the appellant or accused in this case did not actually complete the larceny. So that is essentially, the government essentially thinks that that is the reason for the housebreaking offense, because we didn't have a completed larceny in this case, at this time at least. But what we did have was a housebreaking. He jumped over the fence with the intent to commit the larceny and then was stopped in the act. So the facts of this case are specifically for housebreaking.
So an unlawful entry charged with an attempted larceny wouldn't work in this instance?
Your Honor.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm really not. I'm just wondering what happens, and not that I've decided at all, but what happens if the analysis in Wickersham is swept away and we're left with an unlawful entry in this kind of situation. Then my question is, and I think someone raised it earlier on the bench here, that you're left with unlawful entry, so the government is not left without an offense to charge. And I'm asking you that in this instance, could not an unlawful entry and an attempted larceny have accomplished the same thing?
Potentially, yes. Okay. Potentially, yes. But that is not necessarily the analysis we're looking at here. We're looking at whether or not the facts in this case are appropriate for this crime.
And yeah, I understand.
The fact that it can be charged under other offenses.
Sure, I understand.
Pending any further questions, the military judge did not abuse his discretion in denying defense motion under RCM 917, as evidence was presented that appellant unlawfully entered a fenced motor pool. Using that same analysis in which this court found that the storage area in Wickersham was included within the scope of properties that can be the subject of an unlawful entry offense, this court should also determine that the motor pool in this case can be the subject of a housebreaking offense.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Members of the court, my colleague described the motor pool as being almost essentially the same thing as the storage yard in Wickersham. And it's our contention that a motor pool is not just simply a storage yard. There are numerous other functions that go on within the motor pool that make it more than just a place where property is kept. It's a central place for the unit to hold formations, to hold meetings, and it's basically the home base of.
Well, which way does that cut? You're making it sound more important, which would seem to jack up the liability.
Go towards the habitation or the. Simply, I think when it goes towards just a storage yard, this is not just a storage yard, and that's the point I'm trying to make there. Additionally, when we talk about absurd results, so the government says anything with a fence around it that's going to be used for habitation or storage is now subject to housebreaking. So installations have fences around them. So if someone jumps over, and people live on installations, it's used for habitation. If people jump over a fence on an installation, are they now subject to 5 years of confinement for that act, or have they trespassed? Is that what unlawful entry is for? And finally, there's a lot of discussion about the congressional intent and what Congress's intent was here. And if there's any ambiguity, then the rule of lenity should apply, and it should be resolved in favor of the accused. It's not clear. It's not clear enough for the government to decide how to charge this. How can an accused be on proper notice of
what's counsel? The manual seems to support your position, the definition of the manual. But we have held, you know, the leading case is Ellis v. Jacob. The president doesn't have the authority to prescribe substantive rules of criminal law. The authority delegated to him in the code only goes to procedure. So where's that leave us? You got Wickersham hanging out here, which isn't a housebreaking case, but purports to be based on the statute. You've got the manual, which seems to support your position, but is prescribed by the president, and arguably can't do what he did. So where does that leave us? What should we do?
Your Honor, I'd cite to Miller, which was cited in our brief, which says that explanations of offenses are treated as persuasive in light of this.
Well, we can treat it as persuasive, but.
Well, when you look at that, in addition to the court's precedent that has never held that something without walls and a roof and primarily used for habitation or storage is not subject to housebreaking, I think it's clear that he followed the congressional intent of the housebreaking. Any further questions from the court?
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted, and the court is in recess until further order of the court.
All rise. Court is adjourned until further order of the court.